spent my childhood in Sri Lanka, where my family is from. I was 20 when I came here, and then joined Rolls-Royce and Partners Finance in 1998. So the result of my job is I traveled quite extensively globally. But my family and friends are in Sri Lanka. So I used to sort of go to Sri Lanka 2-3 times a year, and sometimes part of the work trip I stop over or a holiday there. Since the COVID, I haven't sort of traveled much there. And it's important to sort of highlight how sort of aviation helped me to sort of stay connected with my family and friends in Sri Lanka. And aviation in general is important, particularly in the last sort of 25-30 years, brought world together. So aviation is a tremendous power for good. Aviation is hugely important, connecting the industry globally, people, businesses, and sort of across the countries and continents. Aviation enables economic growth, trade, connectivity, facilitates tourism, where Sri Lanka is very important for tourism. And all of this provides great jobs. Many countries such as UK, Sri Lanka, Maldives is short flyaway from Sri Lanka, dependent on aviation to create high quality jobs, better quality jobs even, better living standard, and alleviate poverty. So in Sri Lanka, it's a very tourism-based economy where good quality jobs are created in that sector. I must admit, I'm a bit of an aviation geek. I love this sector. I love sort of watching the planes land. So I used to take my son when he was sort of 4 to 6, go to Heathrow and just watch planes land. It's quite therapeutic. Every minute a plane lands, and you can just look at it and see which tail and its tactical landing, then BA's landing, and so forth. So, and you see it with a lot of other people. So, sort of 10, 20 people watching planes land, some of them with sort of great cameras. It was fascinating. I also get sort of goosebumps when I think about sort of people traveling first time. First time on planes. So if you travel in Asia, I traveled quite frequently in the past, and you watch waiting to be sort of boarded. There were first time passengers, and particularly sort of young children or sort of young families. It's quite that exciting to sort of watch them. They're about to sort of board the flight. And it's sort of a clear envy for somebody who's going to fly for the first time. And if you are traveling quite frequently, you don't get that kind of a feeling. We are now starting to see the pandemic is done. The traffic is picking up. In the US, you see quite a bit of traffic is going through. In Asia, you see that traffic hasn't sort of picked up. But the bilateral kind of borders need to sort of open up for the flights to sort of happen. But if you look at sort of whether it's the US or sort of India or parts of Europe, things are getting back to normal. So it's great to see things are getting back to normal. People want to travel, people want to fly. Our industry is expected to grow again. And we will carry a lot more first-time flyers in the coming years. So this is exciting. But at the same time, with the great power comes with great responsibility. Our responsibility today, I believe, is to sort of consider the impact of climate change on our people and the planet. To illustrate this point, let me take you back to Sri Lanka, where I'm from. When I was growing up, as well as being there recently, I can see have seen the damage that climate change is causing to this developing country. My grandfather was a farmer and a teacher. When I was young, he farmed 2 crops a year. My father is now managing the farm. He's only doing 1 crop. And it's down to sort of a drought and lack of water. So there's a reduced amount of rain in the northern part of Sri Lanka compared to 30 years ago. And has dramatic consequences as a result of it. Agriculture is one of the most important economic sectors in the country. And the key livelihood of the population is agriculture. So the water, the monsoon rain has shortened and less water now. And south of the country is complete opposite. Is a lot more frequent rain, heavy rain, so mudslides across sort of southern part of the country. And when you get sort of mudslides and heavy rain, then you sort of houses get destroyed and livelihoods get destroyed. So that's a big impact from north of the country is less water to do agriculture. South of the country is a lot more, and you get sort of a property damage, and it's a big impact there. Not far from Sri Lanka is Maldives. Very existence of Maldives is threatened by rising sea levels. And we are here in UK, we are also suffering here. The temperature is a lot higher now, it's a lot warmer, which means tree blossoms early and should then, when sort of the summer sort of comes early, then the bees and the sort of the birds are out of sync. And also, there's a lot more flux now in the UK. And it's regular occurrence now every summer time. And the sort of the late spring, summer, there's more rain. So in short, the climate change is affecting large segments of the global population, and its impact is getting serious day by day. And we are somehow responsible for this. So climate change is man-made and is impacting globally. I'm certainly aware of my share. Why? My personal contribution last year in terms of carbon emissions is 20 tons of CO2. My flights alone generated 10 tons. I only sort of flew three trips. One to Mexico, one to Austin in Texas, one holiday in Lisbon. That is 10 tons. And the whole country, this is about UK, is about 10 tons. So my consumption was twice that amount. So last year, I didn't travel much compared to sort of normal years prior to COVID, but it was twice the UK average. I know this because I did a course last year called Carbon Literacy Course. And that's a kind of calculator. You put all your consumption, food, your holidays, and what electronics you buy, way of travel by car, public transport, and how many flights you take. All of that, it tells you your carbon emissions. So I did that course, and everybody else in the business being offered the same course, and all of us have done the course. I will explain more about it later. But as a global industry, what is our carbon footprint? In 2018, aviation was responsible for 3% of global CO2 emissions. if you take the whole transport sector, it was 12%. The numbers are not large, but aviation is one of the most difficult sectors to decarbonize. Our relative share of the emissions is predicted to increase significantly over the coming years because other sectors in the economy will reduce their emissions faster than us. If you look at a car, there are a lot more battery-powered cars now, so there's a target for reduction. And if you look at any other sectors, there's a reduction of emissions in a sustainable way. However, I wouldn't be standing here today in front of you in this aviation club if I don't believe that our industry can grow responsibly and sustainably. So in other words, I'm optimistic about the capacity of the aviation sector to reach net zero by 2050. We can get there thanks to the technology. Firstly, we can lower the amount of fuel consumption in the engines, so fuel burn through technology. Secondly, we can transition to sustainable aviation fuels, and most notably, hydrogen-based e-fuel. Our past achievements show what is possible. Our industry has a successful track record of introducing more efficient technology to reduce fuel burn. Engines flying today are 40% more fuel efficient than the engines being operated in the 70s. Rolls-Royce is currently working on a new generation engine called UltraFan, which is 25% lower fuel burn than first generation Trent engines. Rolls-Royce is also testing the current technology engines, the current Trent family engines, to ensure they are 100% compatible with sustainable aviation fuels by end of next year. This is a very important step for all of us to achieve net zero in 2050. This means we can achieve the net zero using existing technology. So our existing technology engines are important to preserve. We can't sort of rush to the new technology. As a lessor, I'm concerned about value the current tech engines. And the way to sort of preserve that is using sustainable aviation fuel for the current technology engines. At the same time, reduce the impact on the environment. Numerous airlines have publicly announced to use sustainable aviation fuels, like the British Airways and EasyJet and so forth, and they have set timelines for the transition. And thirdly, the most important aspect is somebody needs to make sustainable aviation fuels. So the traditional oil companies like Shell and BP, as well as the new entrants, are investing large sums in sustainable aviation fuel production facilities. So there's a positive momentum building behind the SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, but the supply of traditional feedstock. So sustainable aviation fuel is either cooking oil, wasteful cooking oil, or other agricultural products is needed to make sustainable aviation fuel. But that's a limited stock. So you've got to find new ways to generate more fuel. So the sustainable aviation fuel can do a certain amount. And to do further, you've got to explore other technologies. So the first step is to sort of a sustainable investment going into this space, whether sustainable aviation fuel, or you take carbon dioxide from air and hydrogen from water and synthetically creating e-fuels in a sustainable fashion. So by using electricity, you can sort of bring carbon dioxide and hydrogen together and make synthetic e-fuels. And the technology works. So the Royal Air Force recently completed the first test flight of a hydrogen-based synthetic e-fuel. So they have tested it. And the fuel was made by a new startup business in Britain. So the concept being tested in small quantities, but it's being tested that you can get carbon dioxide from the air and the hydrogen from the water and combine to create a synthetic e-fuels. While I believe we all have responsibility to decarbonize the industry, I also believe there will be opportunities for the businesses that take the lead and help the airlines to decarbonize, decarbonize and transition into net zero environment. Cirium published a report last year, back in December, which reveals $2.9 trillion to be spent in replacing and adding 45,000 new fuel-efficient aircraft in the next 20 years. Currently, 40 to 50% of the global fleet is financed by lessors. This percentage is likely to increase as COVID has impacted the airline's balance sheet significantly, and airlines will need third-party capital to source new aircraft and engines. Lessors have played an important role in channeling capital to airlines in the form of leasing aircraft and engines. Leasing platforms offer incredible flexibility to airlines. Lenders and investors have witnessed the resilience of leasing business models over the last 2 years during the pandemic. They've been well tested. All the lessors have performed very well in the last 2 years, and the lenders all been kind of looked after publicly, at least there aren't any defaults. And the lessors being looked after the senior lenders. So lessors will source very large proportion of capital from pension and insurance funds, and who are increasingly focused on businesses have strong environment, social, and governance policy. So ESGs are become increasingly important. And a lot of investors are starting to ask questions, and it's going to get more traction in the coming years. So the leasing platform that understand and adapt to this new reality will secure more cost-efficient capital and funds. So the currently sort of the lenders are giving some benefits who have Cape Town compliant countries. There are some discounts from lenders. And I think sort of my personal view is that that's going to be similar kind of a trend in the ESG space, where the lenders can give a discount, or lenders may not do any aviation funding, so some of them may kind of shy away. People like us, the club, need to sort of advocate and promote. Aviation is important, aviation funding is important, and there should be funding and capital available for our customers to transition from old tech to new tech. And part of that process is to sort of reduce fuel burn and reduce the impact on the environment. I have already mentioned that ways that Rolls-Royce is leading and supporting customers to make net zero happen. So Rolls-Royce is bringing the new technology in the form of UltraFan. In addition, Rolls-Royce is also ensure the current generation Trent engines are sustainable aviation fuel compliant. So that's what they are doing for customer side. But they are also, Rolls-Royce also has pledged to cut carbon emissions from its operations by net zero by 2030. And my ambition for the business I lead, the Rolls-Royce and Partners Finance, is to reach net zero quicker than this, quicker than 2030. So Rolls-Royce and Partners Finance, or RRP up to his friends, is one of the largest lessors of spare engines in the world. We have a portfolio over $6.5 billion worth of engines. At RRP, we are leveraging the most important asset, our people, to make the transition as quickly as possible. Earlier this year, we rolled out a new training program called Carbon Literacy, which I mentioned earlier. And this training helps individuals to understand the carbon cost of choices that they make every day at home and at work. At the end of the training, everyone must make a pledge about how they will reduce emissions. So my team has enthused about the training. They went into the training without much knowledge about what to expect, came out with a different mindset. They started to see how they can individually make a difference. And we are using those players, what they make, at the end of the training to sort of develop a basic kind of way to a sustainable net zero program. So each 40 of us made some commitments, what we are going to do, simple steps. And we are aggregating all of those to develop a plan, and then we can develop some measurable goals year on year to achieve the net zero at a certain point in time. But we are aiming to do that sooner than 2030. So you may be asking, what are you doing? So one of the examples I could give here is we used to sort of send engines by air freight from one country to another or one continent to another. But we can plan ahead and talk to our customers well in advance and move the engines by ship freight. It reduces the carbon footprint significantly and is much more cheaper to move engines. We are co-locating people closer to our customers and reducing long haul travel. So which means people don't need to sort of travel on a long haul business class 13 hours and come back. They are being co-located closer to our customers and with less travel, we can save on carbon emissions. Embracing net zero is the right thing to do, to preserve our planet, but also a standard of living on this earth. So there are many countries I can see in Sri Lanka what's happening. In Maldives, the water level is 1 meter above that from the sea level. So rising sea levels could affect a country like Maldives quite easily. It is also essential for the industry to need to recruit next generation talent. So there's a huge amount of sort of staff turnover in certain industries. Fortunately, in my business, people haven't sort of left. But in other parts of the business, there's a churn. So need to retain talent, and some of the younger people coming into the business, they are incredibly focused on emissions and sustainability and net zero. So to recruit and retain good talent, we need to focus on sustainability as a priority. So I'm proud to announce that last month, Rolls-Royce and Partners Finance made a history. We became the first aviation company to be certified as carbon literate by the Carbon Literacy Project. which is a charity that credits organizations. So people need to be trained. Everybody needs to sort of set some measurable goals. And the Carbon Literacy Project look at them and see whether they are reasonable, sustainable, and can you achieve measurable reduction in carbon emissions. And then they credit them. So that is the important step, is awareness. People need to be aware of what's happening. So once we have done the course, many people who participated the course looked at it and said, my carbon emission was 20 tons of CO2. They looked at it and said, my God, that is a lot. Even UK, when they compare to sort of a general UK per capita carbon emissions of 10, is a lot, but then compared to themselves, a lot. So some of my colleagues, they were allowed to fly business class. And one person said, no, I don't want to fly business class. I'm happy to fly on coach. And he said, that doesn't play a purely on carbon basis. That was his only decision. And his decision, not the business decision. So he made that decision. And so people with sort of awareness, people will think about their behavior. Similar to sort of a calorie count on the back of a chocolate or a packet of crisp. When you see the calories, people change their mind and change their behavior. So we are the first company, aviation company, to be certified. And it's important, other companies in this aviation space do the same. It's awareness is important. And if everybody's aware of what's happening, their consumption and the carbon emissions, then we can all work together to reduce net zero sooner. The challenges posed by climate change is unique unique in the history of mankind. And it's natural. Even the business leaders who tackle many issues in their businesses and in their careers get sort of feel overwhelmed. It's quite difficult to do carbon change. It's a radical kind of change, and net zero is not easy to do. However, if you cast your minds back in the 60s, as many of us know, John F. Kennedy, who made a famous speech about going to the moon. We need to do similar in the aviation space. Inspire people, empower people to come up with an ambitious plan, and then people stick to that plan. So what did John F. Kennedy spoke about in 1961 in a famous moon speech? And what he said, we chose to go to the moon. We chose to go to the moon in this decade and other things, not because they are easy, but they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, one which we intend to win, and others too. Neil Armstrong landed on the moon in 1989, 8 years after that speech. Limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels is our moonshot. Or you should say earthshot. Every tenth of a degree matters to preserve a livable planet to ourselves, our children, and future generations. So mission net zero is important to us than sending a man to the moon. So we must be bold here to save the planet. Each one of us in this room can make a noble contribution to make it happen. And it's a great opportunity for all of us here. It's a great opportunity that a lot of new aircraft to be delivered to sort of achieve sustainability goals in the next 20 years. And that creates an opportunity for leasing companies, investors, banks, whole host of people in part of this fleet renewal. And I see it's a great opportunity for a company like Rolls-Royce who makes engines, but for personally myself as a head of leasing and a leasing company, that are great opportunities for us to make sure that the fleet is renewed in an efficient manner, and at the same time we can protect the planet and the environment and create opportunities for many people to fly first time, and many people haven't flown at all. It's a tiny proportion of the global population that have flown so far, and enable those people to fly and get connected with other people around the globe. Thank you.
Sustainable issues, and our first evening event, which will be a formal event, will be held here in 4 months' time, and it's all going to be about some experts on the panel about ESG and sustainable issues. It's something we need to get on top of. For me, sustainability was throwing acorns out my overpowered car and driving along and eating more fish and chips and even more sustainable fuel. I think us oldies have to get really on top of this very quickly. But as ever, it's question and answer time. So we have a Moravian mic over there saying, questions, please put your hands up and then probably take a few questions. Well, I'm going to start off because I'm going to ask you over lunch. It's all well and good about sustainable fuel. And actually, it's interesting about e-fuel. I was aware of that, so I've learned something today. But Frank Whittle would still reckon it was a jet engine. He'd come in and say, oh, I can see what you've done with my invention. Besides the fuel, the stuff that makes it work, surely we need a paradigm shift in the propulsion unit. So what's the next jet engine? And is Rolls-Royce looking at the next jet engine? Is it going to be a small nuclear thing? Or I'm a broad geek from aviation here, but we're still talking about a jet engine and trying to squash something into a platform that's